show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. There are baseball things happening, I suppose. One could argue that such a statement is truth. But before we get into that, introductions, of course, I am Jeff Herr, and with me as always is the tentatively upright Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing this evening?
I'm all right. You know, last week I turned 36, and I think that was when the warranty expired, because it's just like, yeah, I just messed up my back a little bit over the weekend. And one of those things that I don't even know what I did. So
that's when you know you're getting old. You just wake up and you're like, what the hell? Yeah, I just sat and watched TV last night. How the hell am I in pain?
Yeah, I didn't lift anything. I didn't work out or anything. I hung out with some friends and that was it.
I can't turn my neck to the left.
Yeah.
More than 10 degrees. What's wrong? I don't know.
Yeah, so it's been
welcome to your 30s is what that is called.
Yeah, just wait.
Indeed.
It just gets better.
That's what I'm told. So I'm looking forward to it, actually.
One thing
I'm not looking forward to is talking more about the Royals right now, to be honest. I mean, we do a podcast, so I'm always looking forward to talking about the Royals with you, of course. But right now, it's pretty poor. It's sad. You know, the Royals, they fought and they clawed their way back into a race that they essentially had no business being in based on how poorly they played in July. But they killed it in August. And then next thing you know, they're right back in the can. And, you know, they had a golden opportunity between, you know, not only playing some of the teams that you're fighting against for these playoff spots, but then coming up, you having a 10-game set against terrible teams, and they're not making anything happen here. And at this point, we're recording on September 14th, Wednesday. They've lost two in a row to the A's, one of which was a 16-3 loss. Mm-hmm. And they've looked pathetic. I mean, beyond the whole thing, we'll zero in right now on the topic that everyone wants to talk about.
Yeah.
Joaquin Soria. The reason being, of course, that last night, September 13th, was the day that Joaquin Soria came in and gives up yet another lead and proceeds to allude to the fact that he thought Dyson made a bad play, and that's what cost the thing to happen. And it's never a good sign when you start pointing fingers. It's a long season. You just can't do that. And it's something that the Royals haven't really done. Now, one of the things that the way I see it, Mike, there's two things at work here. Okay. Two slightly different but equally as important facts about the situation. One, Joaquin Soria is not the only person to blame for not only last night's loss, but for where the Royals are this season. Mm-hmm. The Royals, as far as hitting is concerned, they're much worse than they were last year. Runners in scoring position, they're worse than they were last year. They're starting pitching worse than it was last year. So Joaquin Soria is actually part of the only piece of the team that's doing as well or better than last year's team, which is the bullpen, in terms of the bullpen ERA being tops in the league. Although I haven't checked since last week if that's still the case, but they had a decent sized lead. So I'm assuming they're right there, you know, but they're performing on par with what we expect statistically speaking. But mm-hmm. obviously when you look the results haven't been there. And 12 times now, Joaquin Soria has given up the lead in a game where he's entered and it's either been tied or they've been ahead. So you can make the argument right now that, you know, had Joaquin Soria been just 25% better, so maybe he doesn't give up four of those leads and the Royals win four of those games, then right now they're sitting, you know, just a game out of the wild card. So you could argue that. So that's kind of but, you know, ultimately, though, you look at, okay, Kendrys Morales had an awful start to the season. Alex Gordon's had a terrible season. Moose has been out. Hosmer's had just ice cold streaks. All these different things, you know, that you can kind of throw on top of why the Royals are where they are. Okay, so that's kind of the first thing at play. It's not all Soria's fault. The second thing at play here is Joaquin Soria, regardless of what the team around him does to put him in a situation. So he comes in the eighth inning and the Royals are up 5-4, whatever the case is, you know, then regardless of what happened, how many runs the Royals left on the table, how many errors they made before that, whatever, you know, his job is to come in that high leverage situation and keep the lead. Right. So obviously nobody's perfect. You know, you don't expect everyone to go out. I mean, we kind of do actually.
Wade Davis blew a save against Detroit within the last 2 weeks.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
You know, but Wade Davis is part of the reason why we've kind of expect actually that perfection. So, you know, that's the kind of the second part of it is that even though the current state of the Royals is not Joaquin Soria's fault, and last night's loss wasn't directly Joaquin Soria's fault, he does have a job to do, and he has not done that job satisfactorily this year. At times he has, sure.
Yeah.
But overall, through the course of this year, as the season as a whole, which is the only way you can look at it, then he hasn't been that good. It's indefensible at this point. And I'm a Soria apologist, admittedly, but there's nothing I can apologize for at this point except to say, sorry, he sucked. I guess, but yeah. I mean, you know, that's kind of the way I look at it right now is just that he's not the only reason, but he is a reason. And so much of it to the point that, you know, Hosmer has had ridiculously cold streaks and he is part of the reason that the Royals have found themselves in this situation, because when he's gone cold, the offense has typically gone cold as a whole. But he's also been leading the charge. He's got a home. He's got a career high home run total. He has been, when the offense has been hot, he's been right at the front of it. So, you know, he's defensible. You can defend Hosmer by saying, okay, he's had really good times too, but you know, and you could theoretically say the same thing about Soria, but not to the same extent. And it's just, you know, his job is different. And the way you have to judge Joaquin Soria, for me personally, there's not much you can defend at this point anymore. And he's had a bad season.
Yeah. I mean, I think in the first half, a lot of it based off of that opening night where he gave up some bloop hits, gave up some runs and let the Mets back into the game. And like immediately people, you know, seized on this sense that, okay, anytime Joaquin Soria was going to come into the game, it was going to be a struggle. And like, you know, that initial, I think, what is it called? A primacy principle or something. There's some psychological term. You know, that's your introduction to him. That's what's going to stick. And it stuck through most of the first half.
You never get a second chance to make a first impression.
Yeah. And
in a season.
And even though he'd been here before, you know, it was still one of those things where, you know, people weren't sure if they even needed to bring him in. And, you know, starting the year out that way, that's going to be a sense of anxiety for people. And that would kind of happen. As you noted, the 12 times he's come in with it tied or the lead and allowed runs to score. And, you know, that starts to weigh in on people. You know, I just kind of glance at his game log, and he's allowed runs in 19 different appearances. And 12 of those ended up, you know, giving up a lead or breaking a tie. Ugh. So that's, You know, that seems like a very high percentage to me. I don't know off the top of my head, but it just seems like that's a lot. But it illustrates a lot of what the Royals have been facing all year, though, is that there's no room for error. And a lot of that comes from the fact, like you said, Hosmer's gone through cold streaks, not necessarily in the first half, but since the All-Star break up until, you know, the last couple weeks, you know, he wasn't doing anything. Kendrys Morales, for the first 2 months of the year, didn't hit anything. He looked miserable. There were questions of would they designate him for assignment. You know, and it was, I don't think it was that far off. I think they might have had maybe 2 or 3 weeks before they had to make that kind of decision. You know, it was about the time that they dropped Omar Infante, that he finally got hot. And Morales kind of salvaged his season. But it all comes back to July. You know, when you're talking about, okay, it's not just Soria. You know, that July, they went 7-19, as everybody knows. They went 3-15 when Soria did not pitch in that month. So, you know, that is, I've kind of started calling that the anchor of this season because it's held them down the entire time. If they win 3 more games, which is should be doable with a team with this kind of talent, even 6 more games, if they get, you know, 6 more wins, they're at 80 wins right now, and they have a wild card spot, even with the recent Soria meltdowns. So, you know, that just shows that, okay, you just need a couple of those games to go right. Granted, you can also make the argument that if Soria, you know, in his last 2 weeks, he's blown, what, 4 or 5 of those games? Yep. So, you know, if he does his job, that's another, you know, or Wade Davis, if he does his job in one of those games. So it does, you know, show up that, okay, yeah, Soria has been pretty bad. And I would go back for me, we said early in the year, you know, it's probably best. He was right away in that eighth inning spot with Herrera pitching in the seventh, but it seemed like you should flip-flop them, or at least what we proposed was balance them based on who was coming up in the order. And if it was the bottom of the order in, say, the seventh, well, you go with Joaquin Soria there. If it's top of the order, then maybe you go to Kelvin Herrera. And, you know, I seem like they kind of toyed with that for a bit, but, you know, managers don't really innovate like that, so it didn't really go anywhere. And then, you know, Wade Davis gets hurt a couple times. So in the end, you're kind of left with, you know, Herrera and Davis, and you don't want to overwork either of them. And Soria is the next guy, and there's, you know, I guess maybe Brian Flynn and maybe Peter Moylan. The options just aren't there like they were last year. You know, there's no Hochaber, there's no Ryan Madsen. You know, it's tough. And it's unfortunate because you also run into this situation where now Joaquin Soria has blown all these different leads, but a lot of them could have been different situations if the Royals just get a sack fly in a couple of those Yankees games. Or, you know, last night they failed to get a run home. Or, you know, against the Twins, Kelvin Herrera himself, who I'm a huge fan of, he ended up giving up a home run to Byron Buxton in, I think it was the eighth inning, which gave the Twins an insurance run. And then the Royals go and they score one run and strand a guy on second base. You know, if he doesn't give that up, well, the Royals are tied and Soria is kind of off the hook. And the way it's kind of worked out, it hasn't been the situation where the Royals need that one hit and they get it like last year. And, you know, so that puts the Royals either in a spot where they're protecting a one run lead or they just don't have any other options and they have to walk that fine line. And, you know, if you slip up, you know, it's on a pretty big spotlight. And right now, Soria is right in the center of it. And I'm sure at this point, there's got to be something mental about it. You know, you look at just recently, in his last 2 weeks, up until 2 weeks ago, he was pitching okay. And then he blows a lead. And then next time out, scoreless. Then next time he blows a lead. And the next time, score. You know, it's almost like, you know, he kind of gets over it, and then as soon as he gets into trouble again, you know, then it starts to shatter. And the other thing, and this is something on BP Kansas City today, David Lesky took a look at his slider, and his slider is vastly underperforming based on previous years, which is interesting. So, you know, if that's one pitch failing him, if he's not snapping it as much, if it's the spin rate is down on it, that could explain a whole lot of it. That could be an easy fix, but I think it's going to be a long time regardless until people start to trust Joaquin Soria again. And over the last 2 weeks, I understand that. I think before it was overblown, but now I get it. I get it. I don't feel comfortable when he comes in now. And I just kind of wait for the meltdown on Twitter and pop some popcorn and just kind of try to be as stoic as I can with it all, I suppose.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that was the strangest I remember that we talked about with the Soria v. Herrera situation late in the game was one of the staples of Ned Yost's tenure here in Kansas City has been his extreme loyalty to players and his role definition. You know, we talked about the sixth inning is Aaron Crow's inning, that, you know, that whole thing, right, back in 2012, whenever that happened. So, you know, there was a, I mean, that's kind of how he won the locker room, by sticking by these players, Aceides Escobar, leading off and or batting in high leverage situations, you know, a few years ago before they started winning. You know, we have to allow him to bat, Ned Yost said, because he needs to be, once we start winning, he needs to be able to be dependable in those situations, you know. So he has this string of loyalty. And then Joaquin Soria comes in and Yost had 1 year with Soria when he was healthy?
It would have been 2011, yeah.
2011, yeah.
Because Yost came in the middle of 2010, so.
Yeah. So a year and a half where he was healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, he saw, you know, good Soria, but, you know, not at his most dominant in the 08-09 region. But so,
yeah, you know, but, you know, Soria had been gone. Bad year.
Yeah. You know, Soria had been gone a couple years, had the second Tommy John. Kelvin Herrera, huge part of the Royals winning the World Series and getting to another one the year before, Soria comes in and then he just basically bumps Herrera back. Like, that didn't make, I mean, I'm really surprised that wasn't, I mean, people kind of talked about it, you know, but I'm really surprised it wasn't a bigger deal, not from the standpoint of, you know, Herrera's better and he should be pitching, but just from, like, you know, what kind of a message did that send? And it just, you know, it seemed, the whole thing just seemed kind of weird. And then it proved to be, you know, not the right decision, and Yost kind of tinkered with it, like you said. So it's just, that was the strangest thing, that you have this fierce loyalty to your players, and you have a guy that, and there's, just like any team, there's an intensification, if that's a word, of that sure, particular loyalty, both from, you know, I think management and the fan base, in terms of players that helped win you a World Series, you know. So here's Kelvin Herrera, who was huge in helping you win a World Series, and yet he didn't get that same loyalty. And so it's just, it's kind of weird. And then now that loyalty of continuing to put Joaquin Soria in high leverage situations throughout the season has come back to bite him. So, I mean, you know, I don't know that you can truly make an assessment on how it affects a team, you know, but I mean, we kind of balked at his sense of loyalty when he first got here, and first, you know, we were getting used to his style, and then we kind of realized later it was an asset. I mean, you know, at this point, is it both? Can it be both, or is it a detriment to him? I mean, how are you feeling at this point after seeing how he's handled the bullpen and some of the players as they struggled this year?
I think generally it's fine. I mean, one thing that kind of goes along with all of that is, I mean, you watch him in post games and he'll never, ever bury one of his guys. It just doesn't happen. They could pester him as much as they want, trying to get him to say, yeah, someone goofed up, someone made a mistake, you know, someone's not doing well. He just won't do it. And I think that gets a lot of loyalty from his players at the same time, while he's showing it to them. But, you know, I think that can also be a stubbornness in there. You know, I think that the way that Brian Flynn is pitched and the way that Peter Moylan is pitched, for the most part, you could mix and match them. And I think a number of people have brought up this idea of using them as some kind of platoon-based setup for that seventh inning as a bridge to Herrera and Davis instead of Soria. But I think that's that. It's almost like that's too much that Ned wants to do, and he's never really one to get involved in the platooning part of it. Like I think some guys, they just, you want to have your guy be able to get outs, and if it works, it works, and you just kind of want to get those guys in there. Matt Strom is a guy who kind of fits that role too. So I mean, there are options. But at the same time, Strom is a rookie who's only been up for, 2 months. And Flynn is, never really kind of been in this kind of playoff atmosphere kind of thing. Moylan was just a random guy they signed as a lottery ticket, and he's worked out. So it's not like the pedigree is there the way it is with Soria. And that may be coming into play, too. It could even be just a matter of the money. I mean, I don't think generally that the front office says, hey, we're paying this guy, you need to put him in there. But I think there might be something maybe subconsciously that you could maybe see working there where, okay, this is your high-paid reliever. You don't want to just use him. I can't imagine that happens in the middle of a game where they're thinking that, but maybe when they're plotting things out, it's in the back of their mind. You think, well, we can't just relegate him down to that spot because he's this guy. But there is a certain point where the performance has to be there, and it's not there for Soria. The other issue is that aside from Flynn and Moylan and Strom, Wade Davis, they seem to be a little hesitant with him to really use him all in. He's come off two different instances of flexor strain in his throwing arm, which can be a precursor to a Tommy John issue, but all the MRIs have been clean, so that doesn't seem to be a concern. But still, they do have long-term thoughts with him that, if they feel they're not in real striking distance, they don't want to have something go wrong with Davis now that could affect him next year, when they assume that everybody's going to come back healthy and maybe bounce back, and they give one more year to kind of push at this. So that kind of limits, like last night, Davis wasn't available even though he had a day of rest. And so that meant that you couldn't use Kelvin Herrera after Matt Strom, and because you wanted to save him for a three-out save situation. So that's kind of what they're up against, where they just don't have a lot of options that they want to go with. I mean, guys like Kevin McCarthy and Alec Mills and Scott Alexander or Brooks Pounders are guys who may contribute over the next couple of years. But right now, they're not guys that you feel like you're going to want to bring in unless you absolutely have to. Chris Young, another guy in that who's done well, but we've seen what he can do. He'll have two or three good appearances, and then he has one where he gives up three or four runs. And that's not helpful either, because what are you going to get? It's so a lot of times, I've heard it said, the more you try to use those guys, the more you're banking on the guy you're choosing having it that night. And I think when you get to the situation where Yost has been, you have Davis, you have Herrera, you have a reasonable expectation that those guys are going to be dominant. And Soria, for the most part, has been pretty good, except for the last 2 weeks where he's been very bad. And you kind of, I imagine he feels like Soria can bounce back from that. But right now, I don't know. I think just a mental breather would probably work for him, just because I can't imagine. I mean, you can shake it off and be professional all you want, but when you go out there knowing that, you give up a hit, you're going to get booed now. I can't imagine that feels comfortable on the mound, as much as you can tune it out and as much of a veteran as Soria is. It can't be easy. These guys are still human. And, I think that may have to come into account now, too, just because you can't just leave those guys out there. If you feel like it's even any other way, you kind of have to go the other way.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. And it's something we've kind of talked about before. It really brings into perspective again, like trying to juggle all these pieces, where like just the fact that the Royals were even in it at all. Like, I mean, I think we can lay it to rest. And mathematically, the Royals are not eliminated today, but
it's,
you know, we
be
can
really tough.
We can lay that one down to rest. But just the fact that they were as close as they were, you know,
they were 51-58 at one point. I mean, that's done.
It's bad. That is bad. Yeah. And you can look at, and just as we've kind of done, and you did a great job of last week, you can pinpoint moments in the season. So it's not like it's just, I mean, obviously July as a month was bad, but you can still look in there and you can kind of pinpoint, okay, you know, if this would have been just a little bit differently and this would have been just a little bit different. And, you know, they're admittedly more than most seasons this year, but you know, probably 5 to 7 really pivotal moments in the season that you could say, okay, if you change those, this thing looks completely different, even with all the adversity they've had. So, you know, again, just to bring some perspective, but, you know, it's interesting when you think about, I wonder for the Royals this year, when they drew that line of like, okay, in terms of like your Matt Strom, Brooks Pounders type points, guys, okay, we might rely on these people in the future, these players in the future. So how do we handle this situation now? Do we win now? Do we keep an eye towards the future? Do we try and balance it the best we can? I mean, I think you obviously try and balance it the best you can, but you know, where do they say, okay, we just got to throw caution to the wind and just put the best player out there no matter what, versus like, we just can't pitch Strom here no matter what. You know, I mean, it's kind of a, you know, I don't know the answer, but it's kind of interesting to think about, you know, where they drew that line and if there even was one. Cause it's kind of similar to, you know, I heard on the radio this morning on my way in to work talking about, okay, the Edinson Volquez, Kenderson Morales were the two big rumors to be possibly traded at the trade deadline this year. The Royals didn't trade him. So, you know, if they don't, they're probably not going to pick up the mutual option on either of them. And then if they don't give them the qualifying offers and they walk and they get nothing for them, then you say, okay, was it worth it to keep Volquez and Morales knowing how kind of close to competitive that you've been, but possibly sacrificing setting yourself up just a little bit better for next year? You know, like you could have gotten players for them this year that could maybe help your team next year, whether it's a bullpen piece or maybe a decent second baseman or right fielder or something that you can plug in. You know, there's things that they could have done, but obviously hindsight is 20/20, but you know, if you made that assessment then, like, okay, you know, they must have thought, we can make the playoffs, and they, you know, rightfully so, because they were so close for much of the second half now. But it's kind of a weird balancing act where you say to you, they have to say, okay, well, you know, is it worth it to try and be just pretty competitive and keep the, you know, keep the fan interest in good, or can we? I wouldn't say tank, but you know, do what the Yankees did, where they said, okay, you know, we're still going to try and win. But we do have an eye towards the future, and we know the future is going to be more important than trying to win now, even though we're still going to try and win. And look where they are. You know, they're ahead of the Royals. So, and they have better pieces for the future. So had the Royals done that, you know, would they be, you know, maybe they'd be in the same spot. Maybe they'd be in a different spot. You know, Wade Davis has missed a lot of time in the second half of the season. Had they traded him, trade deadline was essentially right when he got injured.
Right.
So, you know, had they traded him before that and gotten some players back for him, would they really be much worse off or better? You know, I mean, they'd probably be in roughly the same position they were, and maybe they'd be a little bit better next year. So again, hindsight 20/20, we all get that, but you know, it's, again, it's kind of a interesting dynamic when you really try and think about, you know, what all these different things that could have done differently, and was it worth it? And now here we are, we have to move towards 2017 now and look at that. And you kind of think, well, you know, where are we? We don't know where we were. You know, 2 months ago, you had a much better idea of where you were going to be in 2017 before Lou Koch ever got hurt, before Wade Davis got hurt, you know, when Soria was starting to do better, and now it's kind of like, we don't know what's going on. We don't know where we're going next year. And it's going to be interesting offseason. It's really going to tell a lot about what the organization, what their plans are, to see how they handle the offseason.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, I feel like they're not going to disrupt much. They'll just go and acquire guys, but I don't know. It seemed to me like I don't know if the market ended up being there for Morales. You know, he'd had that big June, but he had already kind of, as soon as he got done with a good June, he'd had another downturn. And then, I mean, his hot streaks have been like, he's either rocket hot or he's almost
just beyond
just terrible. And so I don't know if that maybe factored in and they just couldn't get something that they, you know, found useful. I mean, if they're offering like a 25-year-old A-ball guy, what are you going to do with that? I mean, something's better than nothing, yes. But if there's any sliver of hope, you might as well just hold on to the guy. And the same goes for Volquez, where it seemed like there might be a market for him just as a veteran, as a guy who can generally get you innings. But he hasn't really pitched that well. And, you know, I think even all year, he just really hasn't pitched well. So it's tough to sell that guy, especially when the Royals might be looking for something significant. And there are other options that teams could go for that would be possibly similar. So I think it might have been part that they were like, okay, we can still make a run at this, in part just the market kind of working out in a weird way. We'll see how that goes next year, too. I mean, you're going to have guys like, you know, Kane, if they shop him around, he's coming off of a wrist injury. Hosmer, who went on a deep dive in the second half, who you want to see him as a superstar, but, you know, he only just hit 20 homers for the first time in a season. Same with Wade Davis, who's got this reoccurring forearm issue, and Luke Hochaver, who knows what he's, you know, if he's going to be, well, if he's even going to be back. He's, you know, they've got options on him, or the mutual option on him, but, you know, I don't know what's going to happen there. You still have some questions with the rotation, so you got to fill those. And so I don't know. We'll see how that ends up working out as the off season goes on. And, you know, maybe the Royals will do something miraculous. I wouldn't bet any money on it if I were you, but, you know, they're not mathematically out of it yet. But, yeah, I can't say I'm optimistic, and the energy seems to be kind of out of it all, too. So I don't know if there's a third or fourth wind or whatever wind we're on for this team.
Yeah, and, you know, there's always hope for next season, of course, but in this case, it's extremely plausible hope when you really look at it and you see, okay, you mentioned some avenues they could go down. You know, we all know who's going to be back, essentially the entire team, save for Volquez, Morales, and Hochaver. And Volquez and Morales, I don't expect, I'd say a 25% chance at best that they're back. But I think Hochaver's got a really good chance of being back, and I do think they'll make an effort to sign Greg Holland next year. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about the bullpen, if you can get Wade Davis back healthy, if you can get Luke Hochaver back healthy, if you can get Greg Holland back healthy on top of Soria and on top of Herrera and Moylan, I'm not sure what Moylan's contract situation is, but I would assume they'd probably try and bring him back for a reasonable deal if he's not.
That's usually not what their way contract is. When they sign those minor league guys, they usually end up trying to offer him something, unless they do what Ryan Madsen did and can actually cash it in. You know, Chris Young, Bruce Chen, you know, other examples I can't think of off the top of my head. They'll probably offer him something, I'm certain.
And I think they'll put, and I hope they put, Matt Strom in the rotation.
They got to give him a training next year.
Yeah, you got to try him out. And more than an Aaron Crow, Brandon Finnegan try, like a legitimate. Right.
Oh, okay, like, we tried it. And then 2 days later, we're going to put him in the pen. Well, okay, so, but.
Yeah, no, they need to give a legitimate shot with that. But then, you know, if that doesn't work out, him being in the bullpen. I mean, if you've got Soria in a bullpen and he's your fifth option after Herrera, Holland, Hochaver, and Davis, you know, then you're in a much better place. And then you can you can rotate Soria, Holland, and Hoetschaver. You can kind of rotate those three guys because you're not going to need all five guys in a given the majority of nights.
Right. So if you're winning a game where you need five relievers to cover five innings, that's a weird game one. But yeah, it's I mean, I guess it's possible, but it's
stranger things have happened.
Yeah,
it'd be very unusual. But so, you know, there's some optimism in terms of the bullpen. And then you get Moustakas back, assuming he's healthy. And, you know, then, you know, who knows? Like you said, maybe they shop Kane a little bit and maybe they look at some other options. And maybe if they do have faith in Holland and they do get Hoetschaver back and they think Soria is going to bounce back next year, which I do. But, you know, if they think all those things are going to happen, maybe they can dangle Wade Davis out there as a trade deal as well. You know, so, I mean, there's some options. But we'll get, you know, we've got an all an off season to kind of talk about
time.
That. But as we've kind of briefly touched on throughout the show so far, we'll kind of leave you with this. Mike, you did some research and found some interesting stuff about Royals hot cold streaks and so forth. So why don't you clue the listeners in on what you found here?
Yeah. So I just kind of went by, and it's very arbitrary. It's basically I look at where kind of, okay, now they're starting to win games again, and then you break it down that way. So the Royals opened up the year 12-6. Then they went 3-11. So they're 15-17 through May 10th. And then they go on their patented 15-20 run. So after June 1st, they were 30-22, and then they lost 8 games in a row, and then they won 8 out of 9, and then they finished off the first half going 7-12. So they were 45-43 at the All-Star break. You rest up, you know, you feel like okay, they can come out well charged and give it a good run, and they go 4-12 to open the second half. Not really what you're looking for. They start 2-5 in August, so it's that 51-58 spot. And then they go 5-2, then they win 9 straight. Then they go 4-2 and get to 69-62. And that was kind of their high point after this kind of bounce back in the second half. They were 5.5 back from Cleveland. They were right in the mix for the wild card. Since then, they've gone 5-8. They are down 5-0 in the 7th tonight. So we could probably call that 5-9. Five of those are one-run losses. A couple others are blown leads. That's, you know, that's some inconsistency throughout. And, you know, the thing is, you know, when you look back at it, you look at that July and you say, okay, that was a bad month. But then you say, but they also, you know, someone earlier today on Twitter was like, yeah, but they also had that big August. And as soon as they got back into it, you know, then it's on the team now to do that. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. But here's how bad that July was. OK, in August, they went 20-9. Really strong month.
Very strong.
Very strong. OK. Still, even if you add August and July over those 2 months, the Royals would still be a game under 500 in those 2 months, even with that excellent August month. That's how big July was, and that's why it's such it's going to be such a haunting thing. Now, you know, if they only win 3 more games, maybe they're not necessarily in it still. You know, the teams ahead of them have played pretty well in big stretches. The Yankees are playing great. The Mariners are playing really well. The Astros have had a pretty good hot streak. You know, everybody's played pretty well. You know, Boston's played well enough that I think they've overtaken Baltimore and Toronto. So, you know, that just shows how good they've been. So, you know, maybe they're not even going to. Detroit's played very well, too. That's a lot of teams playing really, really well. And maybe it was just never meant to be. And even if the Royals did pretty okay in July, you know, if it just was a mini dumpster fire instead of a huge dumpster fire, maybe they'd still be behind two teams and looking up and it wouldn't even matter. But, you know, you still have to think back in that month. You know, Joaquin Soria is going to make it get overlooked, I think, but it's that's, like I said, that's the anchor. That's the thing that's going to hold them down. You know, when you look back at it, when we do the postmortem, July is going to hang out there and it is going to hurt. And, you know, that's,
yes,
that's, you go 7-19 and you're the defending champs. That's not a good month. You know, that's not a way to repeat. And, you know, clearly, as we can see, they're not in line to repeat.
No, no, they're not.
Another note before we get out of here. Someone, Alan Bush on Twitter, he asked, because he listens to our show every week, and we appreciate that. Yes, we do. And so it's he noticed that a lot of times we will talk about what's happening in the game that night as it's going on. And there have been a number of times where we've said, oh, well, the Royals are up 3-0 in the whatever, and it looks good, and then they end up losing that game, or they're just getting shelled or whatever. So at his kind of urging, I went back and looked at what the Royals' record is on nights that we record. And so not counting.
Do I want to know?
It's mildly interesting. I don't know.
Okay.
not counting tonight, which you could probably chalk up as a loss, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. The Royals overall are 8-13 when we record a podcast this year.
Oh, man.
The Royals have scored 77 runs in those games. They have given up 109 in those games. That's an average of about 5.2 to 3.7. Again, not counting tonight, but it's 5-0. So, you know, they're right in line. The Royals just aren't, you know, not cashing in their opportunities. Most of those games have been on the road, though. It's they're 5-9 on the road on nights that we record, and 3-4 at home. So kind of you know, skewed in a way, but, you know, still, yeah. And a couple of those have been pretty bad games where, you know, that one of those Yankee games, the 13-inning one, was a night we recorded. That one walk-off in Detroit where, you know, Omar Infante didn't turn the double play and they rallied.
Yes.
That was another one. Soria pitched both of those games. So, you know, I guess we should get booed, I suppose, if it comes down to it. Oof. But, yeah, so.
May the Rally Mantis be with us.
It's not.
It's definitely not.
It is nowhere near us. At least when we record. So, sorry.
Yeah,
I guess
for however much we are to blame, we apologize.
Right, right. The offending producers have been sacked.
Oh man. Well, that's. I guess that's good to know.
Right. Eventually, we'll stop recording podcasts. So now we could go back and look at what it was last year, too, to be fair. Certainly, they probably did a lot better considering they won 95 games. But, you know, I'm not going to do that.
No. No need to do that. So, well, we appreciate the urging to look at how we are apparently a bad luck charm for the Royals. I mean,
yeah,
five of those games swing and they go 13-8, and we're talking playoffs right now. So I guess, you know, we have to look in the mirror here if we really want to talk about why we're not going to be talking baseball in October. Well, we'll still be talking baseball. We won't talk in playoff baseball.
Yeah.
At least not Royals playoff baseball.
We did have two off days in there, so we kind of got that right.
There you go.
Yeah.
You know, we just need to plan more off day recordings, I suppose. Right. but thank you so much for Alan for bringing that up and getting us to look into that. Because if nothing else, fun little thing to look at and see. Just because it does always seem we're always positive, and then the next morning I'll send Mike an email like, "What the hell happened? Son of a bitch!"
Right. But and it's almost always as soon as we get done recording too.
I know.
So like, we're probably going to log off of here and close Skype, and the Royals are going to rally and come back.
Probably.
And then we have our formula.
Yeah, I'll be walking down the stairs from recording, and I'll be getting a buzz on my phone like, oh, just gave up a 3-run homer. And like, oh, crap.
We'll see.
That's how these things go.
Reverse the mojo tonight.
Perhaps we can. So thank you guys so much for listening. We're going to end our show here this evening. We couldn't do it without you all. Appreciate it so much. If you have any other things you want us to look into, shoot us a message. Let us know. Love to hear from you. Thanks, as always, of course, to our sponsor, Kelly's Westport Inn. You should go there if you want to have a good time, because good times are had by all who go there. So that's where it is. But and, of course, Baseball Prospectus for allowing us to do what we do, as do you guys and your fans. So hopefully, you know, we'll be looking for some positive things as we round out this season here. What will most likely be a playoffless season. So stick with us. We'll be here rest of the season and all the way through the off season, just as we always have been. So thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next time. And until then, as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com. Sinfonia in A Major by Sammartini. It's noted that the third vicar of Dunshire would play that every night before delivering sermons. It's a fine piece of music. It's 10 past the hour here on Vault Public Radio. We wanted to remind you, dear listener, that this week is Pledge Week at the Vault. Your support is vital, and giving to Vault Public Radio is one way to help support your community. And speaking of community, you won't find a better friendly community than the staff at Kelly's Westport Inn. Like public radio, Kelly's is a staple of the community, a standard, an icon, a Kansas City tradition. Fine patrons like yourself have been supporting Kelly's Westport Inn since 1947, when, I'd note, that Randall Kelly poured his first pint. Contribute to Vault Public Radio today, you can get an official VPR tote bag, or you could stop by Kelly's for an affordable pint, the best pizza in town, and a few games of Papa Shot. We're grateful for your support at VPR and for your support at Kelly's Westport Inn. Enjoy the tradition. And now, 4 hours of Best of the Baroque Period, followed by the Amstein Theaters and the Horse You Rode In On, hosted by Joseph Guevara Amherst.